Thank you very much for your introduction. And it's a real humbling feeling for me to speak in this Beis Medrash about Emuno and Betochen, where I'm sure that you have an opportunity to hear that chizuk about Emuno and Betochen and in general from your Mora de Asra Shlita. Nevertheless, I can understand that the circumstances where Emuna and Betochen has to be practiced may be having a different situations. In order to come to the, to understand, I have a few hakdomas to tell you, to be able to picture the situation where we find, where we have found ourselves in the camps. First, there were several rules that you had to learn by your own experience when you got there, that you have to practice in order to have a fair chance for survival. One was that you have to have a chavrusa, two or three, not more than four, people who you could consult with. If you had a bad day, you could pour your heart out and he could tell you, don't worry, things will get better, this is the way it is. And beside that, it helped even when you got your daily piece of bread, which was done in such a way that that itself should hurt you. We were going in to work and coming back, marching in lines of seven in a line. And when you were going out in the morning at 5 o'clock to work, you were walking by, you had your tepel, whatever, if you had it, somebody didn't steal it from you, or something didn't happen to it, then as you were walking by, they were putting a little warm, colored water. It didn't have any taste of any coffee or anything, but nevertheless, it was something that you put in your stomach early in the morning, and you ran out to work. Coming back in the same way, one bread was given to the seven people who were in the row. The bread was more sawdust than any other material to keep it together. And it was exactly like a form of a brick, about 12 inches. It was hard, like a brick, and it was given to the first guy who was in walking by, and he had to take care of the seven people with that piece of bread. Imagine to make a chalika between seven people with a bread that you had no knife, you had no piece of stone even to cut, to break it or whatever. That in itself was an experience. I'm just telling you this to have an idea what the circumstances were, why you needed a chavura, that by the time you finally got a stickle of that bread, you needed some people who had to consult you, that don't feel so bad. It's not so tomorrow you'll get a bigger piece. Tonight the other guy got a bigger piece. Another thing was very important. That besides having a chavura to be able to help each other, it was very important that you are watching yourself not to get into the hand of the couples. Couples were those people who were in charge. They were from Achene B'nai Israel. They were our own people who were showing their, that they are working together with the Germans, that they can rely on them. And so they were in charge, that they all the things that had to be taken care of, to get up in time and to be on the appeal plots where you have to be counted, that you are there in the right time, or you are not Kolila uttering a Jewish word or doing something which was against the rules. If you were not careful and you got into their hands sometimes that they didn't like what you were doing, they could kill you and they could do whatever. You could not do anything about it. So that was very important. So imagine under those circumstances, we nevertheless, those who had a feeling we still could not get by every day, that we would not down. Those who were used to that, Kol Yomei Chayenu, when we were going go to work, as we were walking, you were davening. You were knowing by heart. And I must tell you also that there was a special nace that I was able to save my tefillin. And I was the only one who had the tefillin in our place where we were quartered. And I was coming to Germany in the first Hungarian transport. I don't know if that meant anything at that time, but as it turned out to be, it worked out a little bit to our favor, to somebody's favor who were in that first line. Why? Because they were selecting people, groups to do certain work, which was the preparation for those people who were destined to come after us, and the work was not so pushed, so that you were able to get into a group of workers that if you knew where you were and you were working out, it worked out fine. I was in a group of 30 people who were going every day to an office building to do the cleaning in the offices. They had about 100 offices and putting fire on in the morning, that by the time they come at 8 o'clock to work, that the place is hot, and so on. So that place was good for several reasons. One reason that it was favorable that the SS soldiers who did come with us for Shmira, they were taking their places at the gates from the building, so that we were not close with them as we were doing our work. We were going from room to room, and one was standing downstairs at the main door, making sure that nobody is going out without his watch. Another favor was that as we were cleaning the offices, people were either willingly or sometimes unwillingly, if they didn't finish their sandwiches or their fruit or whatever they brought along, they put it in the trash can. When we came in the morning, we find something that you could put in your mouth. You have to do that. And sometimes there were people who were willingly, knew the situation, and they were willingly bringing something and put in the trash can so that you would find something. So it had many miles, and you cannot imagine what that meant under the circumstances, that coming into the camp in the evening was a special experience. Nevertheless, on Friday nights, our Havrusa, we had a Havrusa of four, and those were all people who were learning before, and they were Yirei Shomayim, and we used to sit. I was on the fifth floor because of the tefillin. In order to be able to hide the tefillin on the fifth floor, you were close to the roof area, and you could place it there somewhere where people would not have an idea that it is. The only thing we had to watch in the evening, even though it was dark already when we came in. We were told by some of the poskim who were there, who knew better, that even if you are not making a bracha, to put on the tefillin and come is also worth it. So people used to come up there, and there was a little hook where you could put yourself in the side. You put on tefillin and nobody knew, and we were watching that the kapo would not be seeing what's going on. Under those circumstances, I'm just mentioning these hakdoma to you, that you should understand that Friday nights we used to get together and sit on our, I don't know if you can call it a bed. It was from one side of the building to the other end of the building, just a plain wood, like if you would want a portfolio, all wood, but you don't feel so bad. It wasn't hardwood. It was. So we used to sit there and still hate, sing a few zmiras, and to try to say a Dvar Torah from the week, something that had some chizuk in it about Emuna and Betochen. For instance, like Parshas Pinchas, that Oiras Tometo Asir Vasinai Lerech, Shnei Tzemidim Kilchosom. What are the Shnei Tzemidim? One is that one is that Shivisi Hashem Lenegdi Somid, and the second one is V'chatosi Negdi Somid. That you should realize that we are here, and there must be some reason that brought us here. But there was one that I really cherish and remember that came from Parshas Shalach. The Pasuk says in Parshas Shalach, V'yoytziu Dibas Ho'oretz. And they asked the question, shouldn't it be Vayotziu Dibo Al Ho'oretz? What was Dibas Ho'oretz? And they say that if we are examining our behavior, we'll find that whatever we want to do something, and there are in many instances different ways that can be accomplished. Can be accomplished that it is L'Shem Shemaim completely, or it is accomplished that it is a little something for myself too while I am doing this mitzvah. I may have some enjoyment beside the real mitzvah. So he said that the thing is as follows. Dibas Ho'oretz. The Oretz was the first one that was trying to get by and to make a diba for his own reason. Hashem Zvorach was saying that Toitzei Ho'oretz Eitz Pri Oyser Pri. That should be the Eitz and the pair should be different. And what did the Eitz do? Toitzei Ho'oretz Eitz Oyser Pri. That the Pri was different than the Eitz. And he says that the reason that the Oretz did so, that he foresaw that there will be human beings created, and they will have to live with the Yetzer Hara. And if they live with the Yetzer Hara and they will do things that is not the way Hashem Yichud Kitsho Berichu, they'll have a teretz to say, look, I wasn't the only one. The Oretz gave me an Yetzer how to get by with it. And why, after what did he worry about, how did he know that if the Yetzer Hara is talking you aside, that will be to your favor? There was a word from Parshas Ekev. In Parshas Ekev, when Moshe Rabbeinu was repeating to Klal Yisrael what he had to go through with them in the Midbar, that's what they did. And there are two different ways that the Torah is expressing itself. There is that Mamrim Heyisem Im Hashem Yom Dati Eschem Im Maktziv Im Heyisem Es Hashem. So what's the difference between Im Hashem, Es Hashem? So the difference is, you can do a Aveira, and when you come before the Bez Nishal Mahal and they'll ask you, this is in what you did, how come? So Bez Nishal Mahal, that was the Yetzer Hara. So Yetzer Hara, so what does that have to do with it? It's not my fault. You were giving into me a Yetzer Hara. I just couldn't get by without them. He made me do. So, and he says that may help. But when it comes to Aveira, which is Kefira in it, you cannot claim that. Because if you are Koifer, that there is a Boira, how can you say that the Yetzer Hara was doing it? You didn't believe that the Boira was giving you a Yetzer Hara. So that's the difference between Maksif and Yisem, Es Hashem, when they were doing the Egel and all those kind of things, where there was Kefira. That was Es Hashem. Hashem had no chelik in it. You cannot claim that. When it was Mamri Meyisem, Im Hashem, Yom Dati Eschem, doing daily Averas, that was like the Yetzer Hara is talking to into that, we can accept your things. It ties to that the Pasuk in Tehillim, that im ro'iso gano v'tire tzimoy, v'im yeno afim chalkecho, ticho shalachtu bero, ur'shoin chutatz mit mirmo, those are all daily aveiras, ele osiso v'hechrashti. V'im isi ha'yoseya kumoycho, I have a chelik in it too, oi chichacho, you cannot get off scot-free, but you should remember that you shouldn't have done it. Binunu zoi shoycheche yalaka. If you are having a very sweet kefira, then etrove matzil. That cannot help you. So going back to the Dibo, so by the Meraglim too, the Meraglim were saying, what do we have to go to Eretz Yisroel? They were Mechavon L'Shem Shemaim. You just gave us the Torah. And Moshe Rabbeinu is a wonderful teacher. Why shouldn't we stay and learn and do what what you are teaching us? Try to do all those mitzvahs that we can do. And we learn all the mitzvahs that's tulim boras. By the time we come in, we'll know what to do and how to do it. And that was the Dibo that the Oretz was making. That the Oretz was making the Dibo, the Toivus Yisroel. And Mel Yisroel, they were learning that maybe we'll get by with it. But the Emes is Ein Eitzo, Ein Chochmo, Ein Eitzo, Ein Tuvino, Neged Hashem. And this was one of those things that many times it was used between our group. When you had a bad day, watch out. This was the way that Bitochan and Emuna was taught and practiced. And it was not easy under those circumstances. But nevertheless, it was a chizuk that at least weekly we remembered the parshah in the week, and we were able to realize that whatever the reason is that we find ourselves under those circumstances, you have to have emunah in Bitochan and Rabbeinu Shlomo. This is as far as I can tell you about the way we were trying to keep ourselves straight with Chizuk and emunah. And other details, if you are interested in finding out to know certain things, if you put up your question, I'll try to answer it. If you have any.
Which camp are you in?
in several. Started out in Auschwitz, and immediately after 2 days being in Auschwitz, we were transferred to this place where they were planning to build the barracks for the people that are planning to come in. And that place was called Gross Rosen. We were there. I came to Auschwitz the 29th of April, and I was liberated in 44, and I was liberated the 29th of April in 45.
How old were you?
25.
And you were able to say Divrei Torah and talk. They weren't watching you every minute.
It was not easy. We were on the upper floor where the capo happened to be not such a bad guy. And he did not come out to look what's on the... It was four madrigas in the thing. We were on the fourth thing. So the guys hopped up there. We sat down on the rim of the board. And we were still right, singing Zemiras. Not only Stillerheit, but Hungerkerheit also.
How many people were in this barracks?
In that whole area, we were several thousand. I couldn't tell you exactly how many, but several thousand.
And there was a lot of Frum people, mostly not Frum?
Mostly not Frum, but there were a lot of Frum people too. And if there were no Frum people in that group, that group came from people that were caught in Budapest by the station, railroad station, as they were ready to go home or they were coming in. And it was the day when the Germans took things over. And when they saw a face, a Jewish face, they just told them. And they put us in a concentration camp. That was a week before Pesach, till a week after Pesach. And a week after Pesach, we were the first group to be sent to Auschwitz. And we were there till from May the 2nd till February the 20th of 45. And the way I told you that, especially where I was working in that group, there were half of it people who were my type of people. And we were able to communicate even while we were working. And things were not so bad. So that when new people came, we were able to come home from the working place and give a still bread for somebody.
This second concentration camp was only a work camp? They didn't kill people there?
That was only a work camp. That was the idea, that they to squeeze out from everybody the less koyach. And every day they picked up people who couldn't take it any longer. And that was the end of it. And besides that, there was another way. There were people of different madrigas. People said to themselves, what do I have to go through? It happens midday yoim beyoimoy. And I am not able to take it any longer. All I had to do is to run to the fence, which was electrified, and that took care of his problem. And that happened quite often.
Even in the work camp? How much did you have to work in the day, from what time to what time?
From 5 o'clock in the morning, you were going out, till dark when you came in at night at 6, 7 o'clock. And in my situation, it was also a good thing that we were marching to the working place. It was about a mile away from the camp. People who had to be put on truck, on wagons, to be taken by car, in the back was open. It was the older cars they could not use for better things. And sometimes the driver stopped and people just fell out and that was it. And there were no rules how to save for safety. Okay, anybody something to ask?
No.
again about the rations. Okay. The warning about the rations of food.
Yeah.
And I want to be clear, there was no lunch.
Well, besides the stick of bread, you got about an ounce of margarine and something that they called some kind of wurst. But who knows what was in there anyway, so it wasn't over to eat it.
This was only taken on mark when you were marching. The morning when you received some liquid.
The morning you received some liquid, nothing else, nothing solid.
Yes.
And in the evening you received a soup.
Yes.
And you received this 1 gram margarine. And a piece of wurst.
This was given out before you came to the barracks?
This is as you were walking into the barrack.
What about, did they shave you?
They sure did. The very first thing when we arrived was that everybody, and this brings me to answer, I don't know if you were wondering how I got my tefillin. But now that you ask this question, that will include the answer how I got my tefillin. When we arrived in Auschwitz, everybody had to undress the way you were born. And leave your begotten right out there and walk into a great big empty hall, which had benches pulled out, and you had to stand on that bench. But as you were coming in, I happened to have my tefillin. Can you hear me without that? I happened to have my tefillin not in my peckle, because I figured while we are on the way, I don't know how long that will take, we'll be able to have my tefillin at least to put on tefillin in the morning. So I had my tefillin in my pocket, in my jacket. So as we had to undress, I figured I'm not going to leave my tefillin in the jacket. I took the tefillin and put it under my arm and went into the big room. As I went into the big room, there too the couples were in charge. Every couple had one line, and people had to stand up on those benches, and they were shaving you. They were like a Metzora beyond her. They were shaving you, and as I was coming in, the guy saw my tefillin. He hopped it. He said, "You don't need this, forget about it." And he threw it away. As he threw it away, the next room was a narrow window on the top, an opening. And that's where it landed. And it landed in the place where the guys were sleeping. And tomorrow, it was a Sunday morning, the next day, is one of the fellows in Auschwitz. He was working in sorting the packages from the people who were coming. There was sidurim and things that people could use. He used to bring into the camp to give to people. So these guys gave it to him, that we find this tefillin. So he came to our group where we were all in one place gathered, and he says, whose tefillin is this? Who can Hacker know? So I certainly recognize it's my tefillin. And so I had the tefillin, and I was able to take it with me to the next place, and that's the way we had the tefillin till February the 20th, 45. Does that answer your question?
Yes, probably. But did they do this on a regular basis? Afterwards?
Oh, no, you're shaving. No, that was only once they did that shaving. After that, they were cutting your hair about 2 inches wide in the middle of the hair. We called it the Lowstrasse, because we are all full with lice. because you had no washing, no showers, no nothing of that sort. So they were cutting your hair about 2 inches in the middle that you could be recognized.
What? What does that mean, recognize?
That you would not run away. If you run away, they would recognize you and they would give you back to the police. Another thing what they were doing. They picked, it happened every so often, every two Hadoshim or so, when they picked two people. It was their goyro. And they made that aliyah. Everybody was lined up like before you go to work. And they made a whole scene of it. These two people wanted to run away. And they were caught. And because of being running away, this is what they get.
Hung them.
Yeah, they hung them.
What other kind of punishments did they give?
Oh, what punishment? The couples were running around with stakens and with ritzias, and they were knocking you all over. If you happened to come out a minute later than he wanted to be there, or the guy who was counting was complaining, nobody's there, somebody's missing, and he had to go and look for you, that was enough to stay behind altogether. There was another thing that you had to learn. They had a place where you could say in the morning, I don't feel good. I am sick. You are sick? They didn't ask you any questions. Come to the... So that meant already that was a ticket to Auschwitz. Or people sometimes, so you knew that whatever happened to you, you did not go to tell that you are sick. And there were more people sick than healthy. And another thing, there were people who were trying to save that they should not be Mechalel Shabbos. The couples knew that. And if you were trying to find a person, an alila to stay home because of that, that was also a bad omen. Okay.
Do you still have the tefillin?
What?
Do you still have the tefillin?
No, I don't have the tefillin. The tefillin were good till the 20th of March. As we got to the new camp, we had to go through the same mice again. And as you're going through the same mice again, I couldn't take the train along already. Yeah.
What happened to the couples after the liberation?
There were cases that somebody recognized a couple in Philadelphia. That he recognized that guy was a capo, and they were going after him, and they gave him his chelek.
All the captives.
But I'll tell you. But at the same time, there were capos that I can tell you that to be malamed zechus on them too. Some were where my wife Leah Sharon was in that camp. They were five sisters together. And that was very difficult to be able to stand together. They were in Birkenau, that was the women's camp in Auschwitz, where they were from Shavuos till Hoshana Rabbah there. And every day you had to go out on appeal. They didn't send them to work. They were just being there And why did they have to stay in appeal? Mengele came if they needed some material for the ovens. They were selecting from there people who were not looking so healthy, and pick up from there. So, my wife, was making, sewing for the couple, for the Jewish woman was the couple. And because of that, she had certain privileges that she was saving them not to go out when she felt that it's not a good time. So much so that when they came to put up a group of people to send out, she knew that that was not a bad place. And she says, I am going with this group myself. And so there were in many, many cases, they were doing toilets. In many cases, it was the opposite.
Can you describe
I was a businessman at home.
But I mean, how was life affected until you were taken away?
Well, before it was not good either, because they had anti-Jewish laws coming out daily. But the government would not allow the Germans to take over the way they took over when they decided to do so. So, for instance, a Jew couldn't go to the marketplace before 11 o'clock. Any business or trade that needed a certificate from the government, a Jew couldn't get. So, to give you an idea how it was. But we were at home, and we were struggling along the way things were.
Your whole family was taken to Auschwitz together?
Yes, not together. Well, they were taken together from the ghettos, but I was never in the ghetto because I was interrupted in my when I was on my way home, and I never saw my family after that.
Where were you born?
I was born in Hungary. The name of the Kehila was Kemece. Now you know. I'm sure you know where it is.
You grew up there?
Was I up there? My mother, Leah Sholem, is in the cemetery in Kemece, and twice I was back for Kever Olas.
She was nifted before the war?
What?
She was nifted before the war, before you were taken away? She was nifter.
She was nifted in 24.
What was like the day of liberation?
The day of liberation was a mesechta for itself. My last transport, the going, the walking from one place to the other place, as the armies were coming closer to push them through, they were picking us up and they were sending us out. I was in Buchenwald the day before it was liberated. And if they didn't have time to get rid of everybody, also they didn't have time. They were liberated in Buchenwald. I was away only about a few miles from Buchenwald. We heard already that Buchenwald was liberated. And we were now on the way to be sent to. They didn't know themselves where. And at liberation, after we were liberated, I was in a matzav that I was not able even to stand up to go and see when they said that we are already liberated. I said, how do you know? He says, there is an American soldier standing in the turm where you are in the watch turm. So you were asking them, let me see. You wouldn't believe it. There was nobody who would give you a hand to go to the door to see it, because everybody who had the ability to run, they were running to find food. And they broke open the kitchen and they ate themselves mummers to death. So, but on the other side, beside the eating part, those who were still around, after liberation, people were in a mehima gedoyla. You couldn't believe it, that it happened, that it was possible that you are now out of the hands of the Rishon. Some people were even feeling guilty that how come that the Rebbeinu Shel Olam did not give me the opportunity to become a Kodesh. Other people were denying the existence of the Rebbeinu Shel Olam. They say, look what he did to my parents, to my whole family. Nobody left. I don't want to know about anything anymore. So there were all kind of things. And even the people who were still by their ability to think, was not easy to get by. It was a big nisoyan of the liberation itself. And it was very interesting. We were liberated. Friday was Pesach Sheni. And we came into Dachau after 3 weeks of being on the road. We left about 10,000 people. And we arrived less than 1,000 after 3 weeks. And when we came to Dachau, there was the camp, and before you went into the camp where the people were, where the barracks were, there was another fence there. You came in there, the soldiers who were coming with us, they ran away already because they were all Oskemater too, and they would not let us in because they were schlepping out everybody. So they wanted to keep us there and continue the Reise weiter. In the meantime, a big cross of rain, thunder and blitz started, and they opened up the gate because they were afraid that we would stay away. So we went in, and the barracks were empty. In the first barrack we find, I went in there and sat down with a few other guys. I could not get up anymore. That was it. In the morning, Shabbos morning, they came to pick up the people again to go out. Usually they used to come with dogs. And when they sent in the dog into the barrack, you had to come in or else. So this morning, it was already a tumult there in the camp. They came with all the dogs. And I was in that room. I wanted to go, but I had no koyach. I couldn't. And so I stayed there. And stayed there till after liberation. Sunday we were liberated. On Tuesday was like Boimer. There was a chaplain who came to greet Oilam, and it was Parshas Behar. Ukrosem the Royal Boaret Sochor Yoshua. That was the, he started out his saying. But that's all I understood, nothing else. Yes, and it did not happen so quick to get tefillin or talisim or thing. It took a long time, longer than we expected. And of course, it was the first initiative of Klosenberger Rebbe was liberated a day after Sunday. He was near Dachau. They were on the way. He was out of Dachau, being schlepped somewhere else. And they were liberated on the way. So slowly they were organizing the Oilem who was interested. And Feldafing became to be a camp. And from there on, slowly, it developed to be a place where we could zocharnu how we were living as Jews.
How long did you stay in Europe after the war?
In Europe? Till 1949. There was no place to go. But those camps that were established, they were many. I was in Leipheim. A year after liberation, things settled down and people became back with their machshavas and were able to get married again. And people started to do things that was the Seder that we do. So, Samchenu Kimois in his honor. Shnots. In Iro. 64 years after liberation. I don't have the right words to express. To the Rabbanu Shalom, that look, that we were able to be establishing Doiras, Yushem, Yusifers. Change the Nega to oil, change the Tzoras, to Atzeres, and see how Be'ezer Hashem we are able to see Toiles Yishorim. What else can we ask for? That we hope that Council Zoch, that we have Zuchus to be freed from the sun. So we should have the chutz to see the Gula Shalem.
Yeah.